Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Friday, October 15th, 2021. Coming up this hour,
former President Bill Clinton is hospitalized overnight.
President Biden signs off on an increase to the debt ceiling.
Big bank CEOs predict inflation is here to stay.
And Bitcoin rallies on where the SEC will allow ETFs focused on futures.
A federal appeals court is once again allowing Texas to continue banning most abortions. Plus, former Trump advisor Steve Bannon could face contempt of Congress charges. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm John Stash, Aaron Sports. The Dodgers beat the Giants to advance to the NLCS. The Buccaneers beat the Eagles. The Rangers and Islanders both lost.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak on Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
And good morning, I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm John Tucker. Bloomberg Daybreak being brought to you by SEI, with an operating platform designed to support all major asset classes, diverse strategies, and investment vehicles. SEI is redefining wealth management. Learn more at seic.com/IMS.
And futures are adding to yesterday's gains. It's 5:01 on Wall Street. We check the markets every 15 minutes during the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures up 12 points. Dow futures up 120. NASDAQ futures up 39. The 10-year Treasury yield 1.54%. John.
And Nathan, we'll get back to the markets in a moment. But first, let's start with news on former President Bill Clinton. We learned overnight he's been hospitalized, though doctors say he's on the mend. Amy Morris has details from our Bloomberg 99.1 newsroom in Washington.
A spokesman says the former president is being treated for a non-COVID-related infection. The 75-year-old former president was admitted to the University of California Irvine Medical Center Tuesday evening and is said to be on the mend. An aide tells the New York Times that Clinton had a urological infection that had developed into sepsis and is responding to IV antibiotics and fluids. A spokesman for the Clinton Foundation says the former president was in the L.A. area for private events related to his charitable organization. In Washington, I'm Amy Morris, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Amy, thanks. Meantime, at the White House, the ink is finally dry on debt ceiling legislation. President Biden signed the bill to increase the U.S. debt limit last night. That averts the threat of a default, but sets the stage for another showdown in December.
Well, for now, the debt ceiling is on the back burner, and Wall Street is focused on inflation. Big bank CEOs are weighing in on the debate. We caught up with Bank of America CEO Brian Moynihan.
But right now, that inflation is clearly not temporary, and as people worry about, it's more permanent, and a way to conflate that is start to get to work on it.
Brian Moynihan expects inflation to stick around for now. He spoke with Bloomberg's David Westin. Catch more of that conversation coming up in about 15 minutes.
All right, well, the head of Morgan Stanley's also warning on inflation.
I'm not a buyer of this story that it's all transitory, the inflation story. It's not transitory. I mean, wage inflation is real, and the supply chain interruptions, and you were talking about some of the natural gas and other things, have clearly been real. Some of that is temporary, but not all of it. So I think we're in a period where inflation is going to tick up. I think it's going to force the Fed's hand to move a little more aggressively than they're probably predicting now.
Morgan Stanley CEO James Gorman tells us he thinks money is a bit too free and available right now.
And Wells Fargo is also in the camp that counts prices as a major concern. We spoke with the chief financial officer, Mike Santomassimo.
Inflation in general, obviously, is running at a much higher pace than I think we thought it would be, you know, just a few months ago, and certainly going to be there for a little bit longer. We are seeing a little bit of pressure in wages, but not across the board, you know, really only in certain pockets of the company.
Outside of inflation concerns, the CFO says Wells Fargo is making headway on resolving various regulatory concerns, including an asset cap imposed by the Federal Reserve.
Well, we get financial results from one more big bank today, John. Goldman Sachs reports earnings around 8:30 a.m. Wall Street time, and Bloomberg's Larry Kofsky has a preview.
Investment banking has been a bright spot for the industry during the third quarter, and Goldman Sachs should be no different. Bloomberg Intelligence says trading revenue may decline along with the rest of the industry, with fixed income trading revenue seen falling 23% versus a year ago. Analysts are forecasting a third quarter profit of $9.92 a share on revenue of $11.6 billion. Larry Kofsky, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Thanks, Larry. Bitcoin also on investors' minds this morning. The cryptocurrency is rallying after a Bloomberg News exclusive And let's get details live now with Bloomberg's Renita Young. Good morning, Renita.
Good morning, John. Bloomberg News has learned that the SEC will likely allow the first U.S. Bitcoin futures exchange-traded fund to begin trading as early as next week. The Bitcoin ETF proposals by ProShares and Invesco are different than earlier ones rejected by regulators because they're based on futures contracts. They were also filed under mutual fund rules that SEC Chairman Gary Gensler says provide significant investor protections. Unless there's a last-minute reversal, the fund launch will be the culmination of a nearly decade-long campaign by the ETF industry. Live in New York, I'm Renita Young, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Renita, thank you. Major labor disputes front and center this morning as well. Deere, the world's biggest farm machinery maker, is waking up to thousands of workers on the picket line. Bloomberg's Charlie Pellett has the story.
They're striking for better pay as the company heads for the most profitable year ever. Representatives from the company and the United Auto Workers Union failed to reach an agreement over a new labor contract. Workers rejected a tentative agreement calling for a 5 to 6% wage increase for this year. They're also demanding better health benefits. The move comes amid a labor shortage in the U.S. and as pandemic-induced chaos in global supply chains upends business as usual for manufacturers. In New York, Charlie Pellett, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, thanks, Charlie. Let's turn to the pandemic now, where there's more news on vaccines this morning. The FDA has given the green light for Moderna to start giving booster shots. Let's get more from Bloomberg's Ed Baxter.
It says boosters should be given to people over 65 years of age and for those between 18 and 64 who are at high risk for medical or occupational reasons. This is similar to the one given several weeks ago to Pfizer. Meanwhile, President Joe Biden says the next step is kids.
If authorized, we are ready. We have purchased enough vaccines for all children between the ages of 5 and 11.
And he says there's still work to be done in the area of mandatory workplace vaccinations, although he says major progress has been made. In San Francisco, I'm Ed Baxter, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Ed, thanks. Risk on this morning. Futures moving higher along with Treasury yields. This is Bloomberg.
Thanks, Nathan. 5:07 on Wall Street. Time to bring in Michael Barr with more on what else is going on in New York and around the world.
John, thank you very much, sir. A federal appeals court is allowing a near total ban on abortions in Texas to continue. The ruling is in response to the Biden administration's latest attempt to put the law on hold as it works its way through the court system, likely all the way to the Supreme Court. The Texas law bans abortions after a so-called fetal heartbeat is detected by ultrasound, generally around 6 weeks. New York real estate heir Robert Durst has been sentenced to life in prison without chance of parole for the murder of his friend Susan Bourbon more than two decades ago. He was convicted in Los Angeles Superior Court last month of first-degree murder for shooting Bourbon point-blank in the back of the head at her home in December of 2000. Before sentencing, some of Bourbon's loved ones addressed the court, including her cousin, Denny Marcus.
I was robbed, and my beautiful son was robbed, of an absolutely extraordinary, unforgettable, brilliant person whose life was savagely taken from her at 55 when she had many years ahead.
Prosecutors said Durst silenced Bourbon to prevent her from incriminating him in the reopened investigation of his wife's 1982 disappearance in New York. Durst's lawyer said they will plan to appeal. The select committee investigating the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol will make a decision next week to hold one of former President Trump's advisors in contempt of Congress. Steve Bannon could face possible jail time if convicted. The Me Too reckoning hits its four-year mark this week, and Charlotte Bennett credits the movement for creating the conditions that emboldened her to come forward with her story of sexual harassment by former New York Governor Andrew Cuomo. She says, "I'd like to think that now we are believed."
I would really like to think that we're in a place now where it's not about believability and that we don't have to apologize.
A new poll shows that Bennett is not alone in feeling a shift in attitudes. According to an Associated Press NORC poll, just over half of Americans, 54%, say they personally are more likely to speak out if they are a victim of sexual misconduct. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts, more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, John.
Michael, thank you. Coming up on 5:10 on Wall Street, Time now for the Burden Accountants and Advisors Sports Report, and here's John Stashower.
Thanks, John. Baseball down to its final four. The ALCS starts tonight in Houston. Astros and Red Sox, the Dodgers and Braves, who met in the NLCS last year, will do so again starting tomorrow in Atlanta. Dodgers had to win a winner-take-all versus the Cardinals, then faced elimination twice against the Giants. Last night's decisive Game 5 in San Francisco was tied in the ninth inning.
Here comes the 1-2 from Duvall. Lines one in the right center field for a base hit. Turner will score. Lux is on his way to third. Bellinger with the biggest hit of his career has just given the Dodgers a 2-1 lead.
KLAC, Cody Bellinger, the one-time MVP, had a rough regular season, and before that hit was 5-for-62 against the Giants. Max Scherzer pitched the bottom of the ninth, and the Dodgers won 2-1. Changes on the Yankee coaching staff. Third base coach Phil Nevin will not return, nor will hitting coach Marcus Thames. The Yanks just 19th in runs scored. Still not known for certain that Aaron Boone will return. Reportedly, the Padres, who are looking for a manager, are interested in hiring Boone. The Cardinals need a manager. They fired Mike Schilt, even though St. Louis had that 17-game winning streak in September. 77-year-old Hall of Famer Tony La Russa will return next year to again manage the White Sox. The Rangers are 0-2. They did pick up a point. The home opener was a 3-2 overtime loss to Dallas. Ranger goals for Adam Fox and Chris Kreider. The Islanders with the first of 13 straight road games to start the season, a 6-3 loss at Carolina. First victory ever for the brand-new Seattle Kraken, 4-3 at Nashville. And Tom Brady in Tampa Bay won 28-22 at Philadelphia, and the Bucks are 5-1. John Stashower, Bloomberg Sports. John?
John, thanks a lot. Ahead of the cash open on Wall Street, risk on today. The major averages all in the green. The Dow futures right now up 116 points. S&P E-mini futures 12 points higher. And the NASDAQ futures are up 36 points. And just ahead, we'll have a full check of the markets. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. Yeah, the Bloomberg Sports Report was brought to you by Burden Accountants and Advisors. Let them help you protect you, your family, and your business.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business App, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
Good morning, I'm Nathan Hager. Stocks are poised for more gains this morning, judging by futures markets. We check them for you every 15 minutes during the trading day on Bloomberg. Right now, S&P futures up almost 12 points. Dow futures up 116. NASDAQ futures higher by 33 points. 10-year Treasury is down 10 32nds. The yield 1.54%. Yield on the 2-year 0.35. NYMEX crude up 0.8%, up 62 cents at $81.93 a barrel. Brent hit $85 a barrel overnight for the first time in 3 years. Right now, that's trading at $84.76. COMEX gold down 0.8%, down $13.90 at $17.84 even an ounce. The euro 1.1606 against the dollar. British pound 1.3732. The yen is at 114.37. That's Bloomberg Business Flash. Now, here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning to you, Nathan. A spokesman for Bill Clinton says the former president is being treated in a California hospital for a non-COVID-related infection. Clinton's physicians say he is responding to antibiotics well to sepsis. The federal appeals court is once again allowing Texas to continue banning most abortions. The Biden administration is suing Texas over the restrictions. In baseball, the Dodgers beat the Giants in the deciding Game 5 of their NLDS series 2-1. L.A. will now face the Braves for the NL title. Thursday night football, the Buccaneers beat the Eagles 28-22. NHL action, the Rangers lost in OT. The Islanders also lost. Global news, 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, John.
Michael, thank you. 520 on Wall Street. We're live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. It's been a great week for banks. Earnings from the sector mostly beating estimates. Results from Bank of America led to a 4% gain for the stock yesterday. Bloomberg's David Westin caught up with B of A CEO Brian Moynihan to discuss the quarter and look ahead. Let's listen into some of that conversation right now.
Is Bank of America fully back from pre-pandemic at this stage?
we're back. In other words, the activity levels and what goes on day to day is bigger than it was before the pandemic. Got about half the people at work every day, and we're building that up as we go. And we've got, you know, we're doing our job for our customers and our clients, our communities, and our shareholders. But we're still partway to getting people back at work and normalizing. That's feeling more normal, but we still got to keep pushing ahead.
Ryan, you also had quite a quarter when it comes to investment banking, both in terms of advisory fees, but also some of the trading that got done. What drove that trading? It was pretty extraordinary.
It's amazing how much the investment banking business has been sustained because of all the activity, but also given, you know, sort of the restrictions on travel and stuff like that. It's pretty amazing. Shows the adaptability of the economic system. And so we feel very good about it. Matthew and the team, I think, had $2.1 billion plus investment banking fees, the second highest we've ever had. And Jimmy and the team, if you look at in our materials, you can see they're about 20-25% over their average third quarter or first three quarters of the year trading revenue. We're up year over year so far in trading revenue and done a great job there, too.
That's Bank of America CEO Brian Moynihan speaking with Bloomberg's David Westin. You can catch more of that interview on Bloomberg.com. Now we're going to turn our attention to Goldman Sachs Group. It reports third quarter results this morning. And with a preview, we are joined by Bloomberg Global Finance Correspondent Shanali Basik. So it's a safe bet in investment banking fees. They're going to knock it out of the park, right?
Right. The expectation for the advisory fees alone are $1.2 billion. And that's how much JP Morgan and Morgan Stanley made. Goldman is much bigger. And so you, there's every reason to believe that on certain divisions, they will be expectations. If they don't at this point, after everyone else did, it would be a bit disappointing. But if you look at their trading numbers, I mean, there's a big question mark here on market share. I mean, share has consolidated among Morgan Stanley, JP Morgan, and Goldman Sachs in a big way. So what types of gains do we see there? How sustainable are those trading figures? And a lot of these investment banking figures, can they continue into next year?
What's the story on the fixed income side of things with the revenue there?
It's interesting because there has been a big drop off from last year. Remember, in part, you have massive debt underwriting last year on the wave of all those Federal Reserve moves that made interest rates very cheap and very, very easy to borrow, even for the toughest of companies. And now a lot of that love is starting to go away. So debt underwriting is still high, but it's nowhere near as high as it was a year ago. And, you know, for firms like Goldman Sachs, of course, that's a big deal because it leads to less in terms of fixed income trading as well.
Goldman was moving into this more of the consumer side with Marcus, et cetera, so forth. With loan growth, what's happening on that end?
It's interesting. They have been growing. Remember, they are much smaller in that business than a lot of their peers. But with that said, they have done acquisitions. They agreed to buy GreenSky this year. They're adding thousands of employees. They're growing their footprint across the United States. So physically, they have more people in Atlanta. They're going to have thousands of people in Dallas, a huge hub there. So we are seeing Goldman start to become a different bank, but I've got to say it's still pretty early days and they're not yet being judged completely on those efforts. Though when you look at what Morgan Stanley has done, the massive dollars they've put into their transformation, Goldman probably has a lot more wiggle room now to do more.
And on the expense side, what is happening there?
I mean, this is a different Goldman Sachs than just 2 years ago. Their efficiency ratio, which is a key measure of profitability and how, you know, their ability to keep a lid on costs, has been in the mid to low 50s. By comparison, at Morgan Stanley, it's in the high 60s. So they have been extraordinarily efficient under David Solomon. And from what we know is they have more levers to pull.
And you are going to speak with the CEO, David Solomon, today. What time is that?
That is going to be just before noon Eastern time. He is on Pacific time today, from what I understand. They are just getting off of their time with their Builders and Innovators Conference. Interestingly, also, very, very funny, when Jamie Dimon was on his analyst call earlier this week, he had to hop off early or, you know, say he had to go because he was meeting with clients. So you can hear from the CEOs of the biggest banks that they're anxious to get back out there, meet with clients and win business, even when the CEO has to be in the room. They're certainly there themselves.
Real quick, what's the big question you want to put to Solomon today?
What does next year bring for us? I mean, there's still this big feeling that is this as good as it's going to get? You know, the banks did very well yesterday, but how sustainable are these through-the-roof figures?
Bloomberg Global Finance Correspondent Shanali Basik, thanks very much. Appreciate it. Look forward to the earnings today from Goldman Sachs. and also the interview with the CEO, David Solomon. Ahead of the open on Wall Street, Dow futures right now up 113 points, S&P futures up 11 points, and the NASDAQ futures 32 points higher. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. And the Bloomberg weather from Rob Carolyn for the tri-state area, partly to mostly sunny today. The high temperature 75 to 80 degrees, partly cloudy, lows about 65. Tonight, increasing clouds tomorrow, showers and thunderstorms.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130. To Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 991. To Boston, Bloomberg 1061. To San Francisco, Bloomberg 960. To the country, Sirius XM Channel 119. And around the globe, the Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
It is 5:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm John Tucker.
I'm Nathan Hager. We're just about 4 hours away from the open of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour, beginning with former President Bill Clinton. Overnight, we learned that he is in the hospital with a non-COVID infection. Former President Clinton was admitted to a hospital in California to treat sepsis, though doctors say he is on the mend. Dr. Imran Ali is a physician fellow at Mount Sinai Health.
From what I'm hearing from my sources, that all he needed was some IV fluids to help with his blood pressure, but his blood pressure was not dangerously low to be of any serious concern.
Dr. Imran Ali at the Mount Sinai Health says reports from the hospital point to former President Clinton being discharged fairly soon.
Meantime, at the White House, the ink is finally dry on debt ceiling legislation. President Biden signed the bill to increase the U.S. debt limit last night, and that averts the threat of a default but sets the stage for another showdown in December.
All right, let's turn to markets now, John. Stock futures are higher this Friday morning. Oil is on track for an eighth weekly gain, and that would be the longest winning streak since 2015. Earlier, Brent topped $85 a barrel for the first time in 3 years. Checking oil now, Brent's at $84.80, and NYMEX crude is at $82.03.
And Bitcoin also higher this morning following Bloomberg News exclusive. Let's get the very latest live with Bloomberg's Renita Young. Good morning, Renita.
Good morning, John. Bloomberg News has learned that the SEC will likely allow the first U.S. Bitcoin futures exchange-traded fund to begin trading as early as next week. The Bitcoin ETF proposals by ProShares and Invesco are different than earlier ones rejected by regulators because they based themselves on futures contracts. They were also filed under mutual fund rules that SEC Chairman Gary Gensler says provide significant investor protections. Live in New York, I'm Renita Young, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Renita, thank you. Of course, earnings are in focus once again this morning. Wall Street wraps up a busy week of bank results when Goldman Sachs reports around 8:30 Wall Street time. The options market is pricing an unusual volatility for Goldman shares. The bets imply a move around 3%.
Yeah, let's turn to the pandemic now. FDA panel backing plans for COVID booster shots from Moderna. Advisors say boosters should be given to older people and those at high risk of the disease. At the same time, President Biden says the government is preparing for approval of vaccines for children.
We have purchased enough vaccines for all children between the ages of 5 and 11.
The FDA holds another panel hearing October 26 to decide on vaccines for kids ages 5 to 11.
All right, S&P futures up 12 points right now. Dow futures up 120. NASDAQ futures up 33. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, thanks, Nathan. 5:33 on Wall Street. Time to bring in Michael Barr with more on what else is going on in New York and around the world.
John, thank you very much, Sarah. Congressional committee investigating the January 6th insurrection has set a vote to recommend criminal contempt charges against former White House aide Steve Bannon after he defied the panel's subpoena. The panel is set to vote Tuesday to recommend the charges. That would send the recommendation to the full House for a vote. If the House votes to recommend the contempt charges against Bannon, the Justice Department will ultimately decide whether to prosecute. New York real estate heir Robert Durst was sentenced to life in prison without chance of parole for the murder of his friend more than two decades ago. The 78-year-old was convicted in Los Angeles Superior Court last month of first-degree murder for gunning down Susan Berman at her home in December of 2000. During the sentencing hearing, some of Berman's loved ones addressed the court, including her niece.
I would like Bobby to live many, many years, to be on record for the longest living predator ever.
Durst's lawyer says they will appeal. A federal appeals court is once again allowing Texas to continue banning most abortions. The decision last night keeps the law known as Senate Bill 8 in place as the Justice Department tries to halt the law. The Me Too movement has reached its four-year mark. Charlotte Bennett's story of alleged misconduct by New York's then-governor Andrew Cuomo helped lead to his resignation earlier this year. An investigation also accused Cuomo of harassing at least 11 women in a shocking report by the state's attorney general. Bennett, Cuomo's former health policy aide, says she hopes the movement will fix the systemic behaviors that allow for this type of abuse to occur.
We know the underbelly of these institutions better than anyone. And I think we have a lot of solutions to fix it. And we should be at the table. It should be our table.
Bennett also says she hopes the movement will not only provide a community for those who have suffered similar experiences, but inspires leaders to do better. Global News, 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts from more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg Job.
Michael, thank you. 5:35 on Wall Street. Time now for the Burden Accountants and Advisors Sports Report. Here's John Stashower.
Thanks, John. Dodgers and Giants, decisive game five in San Francisco. Kind of unfair, but baseball's two best teams met in the NLDS round. You knew someone was going to win for the 110th time this season. It was L.A. with a run in the ninth inning to win 2-1 in advance to the NLCS versus Atlanta. Mookie Betts had four of the Dodgers' eight hits. Cody Bellinger had the run scoring hit in the ninth inning. Max Scherzer got the save, ending with a strikeout of Wilmer Flores with the tying run on. The first base umpire called it a swing when it appeared that Flores had held up. The Dodger manager, Dave Roberts.
What we expected, you know, to come down, every game could have went either way for the most part, and come down to a game five and the ninth inning. So, you know, just a great series, and the energy here was a lot of fun. And just to see our guys step up and win a ball game obviously was huge.
How close were these teams? They played 24 times, each won 12. The ALCS, Red Sox and Astros, gets going tonight in Houston. The Yankees fired hitting coach Marcus Thames and third base coach Phil Nev, and the Cardinals fired manager Mike Schilt. The Rangers home opener, a nice tribute to the late Rod Gilbert, including a seven-second moment of silence for number seven, Mr. Ranger, who passed away last summer. Dallas scored minute 38 into overtime and won 3-2. The Islanders lost 6-3 at Carolina. The Nets won their preseason finale in Brooklyn over Minnesota, and Kevin Durant said he is positive that the Kyrie Irving situation will work itself out. For now, Irving not part of the team because he has not gotten the vaccine. NFL in Philadelphia, the start of week six. Tampa Bay built up a 3-touchdown lead, held on, beat the Eagles 28-22. The Bucs are 5-1. John Stashower, Bloomberg Sports. John.
Thanks, John. 5:37 on Wall Street. And it's time now for the Tri-State Business Report. For that, we're joined by Bloomberg's Joan Doniger.
Owners of cars registered outside New York owe the city more than $250 million in fines and fees. Streets Blog says they're from millions of unpaid parking and moving violation tickets issued in the past 5 years. The blog says New Jersey drivers are responsible for most of them, with more than 438,000 unpaid tickets. There had been plenty of worry about real estate in Manhattan during the pandemic, but the Financial Times says there's been a resurgence. Residential tenants have signed nearly 10,000 new leases in the city, the highest since 2008. Rents in New Jersey are soaring to record heights, but these rents involve commercial real estate. NJ Spotlight reports vacancies are at record lows for warehouses and other industrial buildings in north and central New Jersey. The asking price up more than 15.5%. The commercial real estate company Newmark says that's been driven by strong demand from logistics companies. With the Bloomberg Tri-State Business Report, I'm Joan Doniger.
Thanks, Joan. It is 5:38 on Wall Street. Bloomberg Radio is on the air from San Francisco to New York, London to Hong Kong. And let's check in now with our global news team for some of the top stories heard on our 300 affiliate radio stations around the world.
I'm Courtney Donahoe on WHAS in Louisville. Toyota cut its global car production target for November by 15%.
I'm Gina Cervetti, and for WCCO in Minneapolis, I'm reporting that U.S. Bancorp sees an opportunity to grab more business banking customers for its payment services.
I'm Caroline Hepcom, Bloomberg DAB, digital radio in London. We're reporting on Britain offering short-term work permits to butchers amid labor shortages.
I'm Ann Cates, and on WBZ in Boston, I'll be
reporting on a delay at Virgin Galactic.
I'm Steve Potusk, and on 1010 Winds in New York, we're talking about Citigroup inviting employees back to 21 offices across North America.
And those are some of the stories our 2,700 Bloomberg journalists and analysts are working on this morning around the world. It is 5:39 on Wall Street.
The following is an editorial from Bloomberg Opinion.
By the end of the year, the U.S., Europe, Canada, and Japan could find themselves with more than 600 million excess doses of COVID-19 vaccines. Meanwhile, in dozens of developing countries, less than 5% of the population has access to the life-saving shots. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres has called this state of affairs immoral and stupid. And he's right. Rich countries have delivered only a tiny fraction of the more than 1 billion doses they've pledged to share with the rest of the world. They need to pick up the pace. In addition to donating vaccines, they should swiftly provide the $8 billion that the World Health Organization says is needed to store and distribute the shots. The longer the pandemic rages, the greater its costs will be, including for countries that have already vaccinated most of their citizens. This is about self-interest as much as benevolence. This editorial was written by the Bloomberg Opinion Editorial Board. I'm David Shipley. For more Bloomberg Opinion, please go to Bloomberg.com/opinion or OPI and go on the Bloomberg Terminal.
This has been Bloomberg Opinion.
Bloomberg Opinion Editorial is going to be heard every weekday at this time. The Bloomberg Sports Report was brought to you by Burden, accountants and advisors. Let them help protect you, your family, and your business. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business App, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
Nathan Hager, stocks are moving higher. U.S. equity futures are pointing to more gains on Wall Street as well, with equities helped by a solid roster of corporate results as oil futures spike to their highest level since October of 2018. We check the markets every 15 minutes during the trading day on Bloomberg. Right now, S&P futures are up 10 points, Dow futures up 111, NASDAQ futures up almost 26 points. Germany's DAX and the CAC in Paris are both higher by 0.3%. The 10-year Treasury is down 11/32nds. The yield 1.55% on the benchmark 10-year note. Yield on the 2-year now 0.36%. NYMEX crude up 0.9%, up 71 cents at $82.02 a barrel. Brent hit $85 a barrel overnight. Right now it's at $84.75. COMEX gold down 0.9%, down 15.30 at $17.82.60 an ounce. The euro 1.1602 against the dollar, British pound 1.3722, the yen 114.35, and a quick check of Bitcoin right now around $59,150. At 8:30 Wall Street time, we get retail sales for the month of September, import and export prices as well, and October Empire Manufacturing. The University of Michigan Consumer Index comes out at 10, and Morgan Stanley wraps up third quarter bank earnings before the opening bell. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Thank you very much, Nathan. UC Irvine Medical Center in California says former President Bill Clinton is recovering in the ICU from a blood infection known as sepsis. In baseball, the Dodgers beat the Giants in the deciding Game 5 of their NLDS series. Global news, 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts, more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, John.
All right. Of course, it's Goldman Sachs reporting earnings this morning. Waiting for that. It is 5:48 on Wall Street, live from the Bloomberg Interactive Broker Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. Worker shortages and supply chain disruptions have become something of a trademark of the pandemic. Open jobs are going unfilled. Wait times at local restaurants, bars, and coffee shops are going up. Experts say it's temporary, but we've been hearing that for a while now. Let's get a deeper dive at the issue now, and where do we go from here in this special report from Bloomberg's Greg Jarrett.
Help wanted. The signs are everywhere, and they are not coming down anytime soon. The reasons and effects are myriad. Former Treasury Secretary Lawrence Summers says months of stimulus may play a large role.
The fact that people are being paid more to stay at home
than they would be to work.
Kind of the after effect of Merle Haggard's Working Man's Blues.
I keep my nose on the grindstone, work hard every day.
But Jim Glassman at JPMorgan Chase says the stimulus effect, though lingering, should be winding down.
People have gotten a lot of help during the pandemic. Child care credits, a lot of extra programs to help them if they're unemployed. A lot of people dropped out. And by the way, a lot of the folks who dropped out, they still have been qualifying for unemployment insurance because they did have a job. That all is beginning to wind down now. In the last 4 weeks, millions of people have seen their unemployment benefit start to drift off. So I think we're going to find out over the next several weeks that the trend is going to start to reverse.
For now, perhaps for the next few months, the effects of the worker shortage is being felt, especially in the service sector, as seen in the most recent jobs numbers due to the recent COVID surge. This according to Jeffrey Rosenberg at BlackRock.
But the key disappointing industry sectors here that point to the Delta variant are leisure and hospitality.
This means that even though cities may be reopening and crowds gathering for sports and festivals, being served at those gatherings proves tough when only a few servers are on hand to deal with the patrons. Do you want to wait in line for a coffee and donut for 20 or 30 minutes? No, say many customers from coast to coast. Let's go to Boston now, where a sign on the popular South End Buttery reads, "Keep calm and come inside, but if you're going to be obnoxious, abusive, or rude to the staff, keep calm and stay away." The Buttery owner, Richard Gordon, put up the sign after an impatient customer knocked over a hot drink stand and flung a stack of cups at an overworked barista.
He caused the barista, told him politely that he would need to wait in line behind the other orders that came before his, before he got his large almond milk latte, which he felt was more important than anybody else waiting for their drinks.
Chef Daniel Boulud owns 7 high-end restaurants in New York City and says people need to want to work.
It has to stop and people have to go back to work. The office have to bring back people in the office.
In Pleasanton, California, Josh McKay, proprietor at McKay's Tap House, expanded just before the pandemic kicked in, building out a coffee shop inside the footprint of his pub. Recently, McKay announced he was going to have to close that venture and work even harder to keep his main business open.
My wife and I are going to be working open to close, front of the house and back of the house all weekend.
McKay says extended family members and members of the community have stepped up to chip in, and he's doing well with their help. But he has seen major problems with his supply chain, even with his primary offering.
The craft breweries have pivoted, and they've done a very good job of it, and most of them have shifted into a lot of canning. They're getting better bang for their buck selling cans. Draft beer is what we do, and so we're finding less and less pure draft beer.
Just across the bay in San Francisco, a globally known beef house solidified by the late Anthony Bourdain.
Behold the fantastically stuck-in-time Temple of Roast Beef, House of Prime Rib.
Look at this one. It's packed. This is a temple of old-school meat.
Joe Betts is the proprietor at the House of Prime Rib, where I couldn't find a reservation available well into the new year. Betts says he was able to hang on to his staff for one simple reason.
Because during the pandemic, when we were closed, we kept the health insurance and paid quite a bit twice their salary.
And not just basic scale.
There is nobody there who is on scale. Everybody's over scale.
I asked Betts if he's experiencing supply chain problems.
Yes.
Especially with his signature dish.
The beef is close to double what I paid in 19.
But Bet says he's kept his price hikes down.
Sometimes you make more, sometimes you make less.
Barbara Corcoran of the Corcoran Group and star of Shark Tank.
The main problem with all of business right now is finding the right people. That is the single largest challenge, whether you own a restaurant, a shoe shop, or a giant corporation. Hiring and finding and luring in the right people has been the biggest challenge.
Corcoran says businesses may have to bite a big wage bullet to restaff.
I mean, all these companies slimmed down and got their house in order. Whether or not they're willing to pay a higher wage remains to be seen, but so far, they are not.
Sarah House, Wells Fargo senior economist.
I think there's questions over, okay, to what extent is this permanent? You know, we've seen substantial retirements. If you look at labor force participation across age, it's recovered about half its loss for prime age workers, but it hasn't gone anywhere for your older workers, so those 65 or older. And so I think we've seen some permanent loss of labor supply.
Former Treasury Secretary Summers says all of this adds up to consumers paying more for longer.
I actually think there's reason to think that inflation might even accelerate.
Most agree the tradition of working nine to five may not return anytime soon. In San Francisco, I'm Greg Jarrett, Bloomberg Radio.
For that, we're coming up to 5:55 on Wall Street. Time now for our daily Bloomberg Law Brief, exploring legal issues in the news, brought to you by American Arbitration Association. International trade or business dispute, resolve faster with the International Center for Dispute Resolution, the leader in alternative dispute resolution around the world, ICDR.org. Today, we're looking at a case out of Florida. Governor Ron DeSantis is fining Leon County $3.5 million because it requires COVID vaccines for employees. At the same time, Texas Governor Greg Abbott issued an executive order banning vaccine mandates. These bans conflict with President Biden's mandates and set the stage for a court battle. For more, Bloomberg's June Grosso speaks to Harold Krent, professor at the Chicago Kent School of Law.
So how will Governor DeSantis's $3.5 million penalty withstand a court challenge?
I think it will stand if the state government has the authority under Florida law to enact such a ban. States have used their authority under general powers to act in an emergency and confront a disaster to preclude employers in their state from mandating vaccine. This strikes some of us as odd or bizarre, but it does not likely violate any federal constitutional right.
Governor Greg Abbott of Texas issued a broad executive order on Monday. It bars virtually any coronavirus vaccine mandate in the state. So Texas companies are going to face this conflict, violate the federal law or violate the Texas law.
Companies are in an unenviable situation, right? You have to either comply with the OSHA standard or with the mandate from the governor of Texas. There is enough time to go to court to try to get a resolution of this so that the companies will have more guidance. And I'm sure they will do that. Obviously, they cannot comply with both determinations at once.
That's Chicago Kent College of Law professor Harold Krent speaking with Bloomberg's June Grosso. You can catch more of that interview, plus analysis of the latest legal news, by subscribing to the Bloomberg Law Podcast or downloading the show at Bloomberg.com/podcast. Attorneys can find exceptional legal research and business development tools at BloombergLaw.com and on the Bloomberg terminal at BLawGo. While we wait the final round of bank earnings this morning from Goldman Sachs, we see futures moving higher, with S&P futures up 13, Dow futures up 134, NASDAQ futures up 37 points. The 10-year Treasury is down 10 32nds, the yield 1.54%, the yield on the 2-year 0.35, 30-year yield 2.05%. NYMEX crude up 0.8% at $81.99 a barrel. Brent hit 85 overnight. It's at 84.71 at the moment. COMEX gold down 0.75%, down 13.40, 17.84.40 an ounce, and the euro 1.1604 against the dollar. Bloomberg Daybreak continues. This is Bloomberg.